Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Round two, game number one between the Winnipeg Jets and the Montreal Canadiens does not go the way that the Winnipeg Jets wanted. They started flat. They ended the game flattening a member of the Montreal Canadiens. Mark Scheifele will be the story of tonight and tomorrow. An absolutely vicious, uncalled for, dirty hit that will result in a suspension for the Winnipeg Jets top line centerman. Along with Ezra Ginsberg, along with Dave Minuk, I am your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Gentlemen, the Jets losing tonight 5-3 to the Montreal Canadiens. The story of the game, the hit by Mark Scheifele on Jake Evans, a terrible way to end the game. We'll get to that. The injuries the Winnipeg Jets suffered throughout the course of the game. No Paul Stastny to start. Then they lose Dylan DeMello a shift into the game. And of course, they lose the game itself. 1-0 Montreal now leads this round two series with a 5-3 victory tonight. Good to see you guys. It has been a long time since we were last all together. It has been a while. The rust, which was a storyline about tonight's game, certainly was on the Winnipeg Jets in that first period, giving up three first period goals to the Montreal Canadiens, which put them behind the eight ball from the get-go, Ezzy.
Yeah, and that was a huge storyline, right? You touched on it, right? Like, whenever we've seen this so many times, guys, and I'm not talking about the Jets here. When you have a team that sweeps, that is coming off of a sweep, and you're facing a team that's, you know, coming in after a seven gamer, you know, that's always going to be an issue, right? And not only was there a break, there was a long break, like you said, Drew, well over a week. And, you know, it was clear that the Canadians came in really confident, having won the last three games against the Leafs, and they took it to the Jets in the first period. And I don't think you can fault Connor Hellebuyck at all. Maybe, on one of the goals, but certainly, Jesperi Kotkaniemi gets it going with just a beautiful tip, right? Like Jeff Petrie clearly just putting that puck on net, and Logan Stanley tried to decapitate Corey Perry, and, you know, good on Corey Perry, you know, just for getting the puck to Eric Staal. But that's obviously a missed assignment, right, guys? Like, you can't have, it was Stanley and Pullman, if I'm not mistaken, both, going after Perry and Staal was wide open in front, right? So not a lot of chance for Hellebuyck there. And then, you know, Nick Suzuki's goal, guys, I mean, that's a highlight goal. And, you know, good on Joel Edmondson, good Manitoba boy, you know, nice long stretch pass. And Nick Suzuki just outweighs Connor Hellebuyck, simply put, right? Like, he just beats him on a really nice deke. So those three goals are all pretty nice goals for the Canadians. And obviously, you know, Adam Lowry makes it a two-goal game with that beautiful shorthander off of that really bad giveaway by Eric Gustafson. I mean, he just has to get that puck deeper than that. That was just a bad giveaway. And good on Lowry for, you know, taking advantage of it. We know he's one of the Jets' top penalty killers, right? But, just unfortunate, you know, in that Derek Forbort, you know, after a big stretch of the game, boys, where we didn't have any offense in terms of goals. And then shortly right after, Dave knows this, my least favorite penalty, the puck over the glass. Clearly, Josh Morrissey wasn't trying to shoot that over the glass. It wasn't even a shot. It was just, you know, him deflecting the puck, you know, disrupting that drive from Cole Caulfield. So just really unfortunate. And then obviously, you know, Shea Weber, who gets breakaways every single game. Obviously, I'm joking, but, he gets in behind the Jets defense. And then Brendan Gallagher just comes in there and, you know, cleans up the garbage, because you could tell guys like Hellebuyck thought he had that under his pad. And then obviously he didn't have control of that rebound. And so just really unfortunate. And then obviously Kyle Connor makes it interesting there at the end. But yeah, we have to talk about what happened at the end there. I have no idea, guys, what Mark Scheifele was doing. Like, he clearly was trying to prevent that empty net goal from Jake Evans, but that was just as dirty as it gets, and I won't be surprised if he's suspended. I'm sure we're going to talk about that quite a bit here on the post-game show, but just an awful way to end the game, because for the most part, that was a really entertaining game one, but that was just plain stupid.
It was plain stupid, Dave. You were obviously there. You're at the arena, so you got to witness it up close and personal. You know, for me, Mark Scheifele was a guy who was not in control of his emotions, particularly in the third period of tonight's game. He takes the offensive zone roughing penalty. It doesn't end up costing the Winnipeg Jets, but he takes an offensive zone roughing penalty after, you know, he's involved in a scrum and he takes it to a whole other level, a whole level, you know, beyond a scrum, and takes an unnecessary penalty. And then Jake Evans beats out his own icing there and scores a goal. And, you know, of course you can come in and you can hit the guy when he's about to tuck it in like that, but you can't truck him in the head and make contact in his head. And everything about that was not a it was not an acceptable play for Mark Scheifele. And more than what's going to hurt the Jets tonight and the loss is that Mark Scheifele, likely, I'm going to say, to be suspended, will further hurt the Winnipeg Jets for, you know, game two for sure, and we'll see about any more games than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know, right? I mean, the truth is, and I saw the play live, obviously, because I'm inside the arena, but I have to tell you, I haven't seen the replay, because they haven't really shown the replay here in the building. They didn't show it. So I only saw it the one time. From my one initial viewing, I thought it was a bad play by Mark Scheifele, and it's interesting because there's a lot of different views on it. A lot of people are saying, and I'm assuming it's not from a partisan lens; it's from their own perspective, which people are entitled to. Some people feel that it was a hockey play, and others are saying it was a dirty play. Like I said, my initial thought when I saw the hit was it seemed like it was a charge by Mark Scheifele. And so that would be my impression of it. And again, I haven't watched it 100 times because obviously I've watched it here in the arena. And like I said, they didn't show the replay and I didn't go searching for it on the internet because I was trying to get ready for the show. So initial reaction was that it was, you know, and it looks terrible. And, you know, I saw afterwards some of the Montreal gays saying that Jake Evans has a history of head injuries and dealing with that sort of thing. So that makes it even worse. He gave the thumbs up, which of course is good. But I mean, guys, I got to tell you, I don't know if the TV stayed on, so I don't know what everybody at home saw, but I saw a Montreal team that was ready to murder Mark Scheifele. I mean, if you guys could hear what they were saying on the ice, I don't know if they played that on the television or not, but let me tell you, it was like
Shea Weber looked like he would. If Shea Weber had gotten loose, Dave, to your point, he was out for blood. Shea Weber was beyond upset with what Mark Scheifele delivered to Jake Evans there.
But could you hear what they were saying on the ice or no?
No, you couldn't hear it.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I could hear it, and so could the 500 healthcare workers who deserve it. By the way, a big kudos for showing up to the game, and that was pretty awesome to see them getting rewarded. Like I said, the Montreal team, Shea Weber, but all the guys there were ready to kill Mark Scheifele. I mean, F-bomb. A lot of it was, we're coming after you. So let me tell you, regardless of what happens with 55, he's going to have to answer the bell for this one, because people could say it was a clean hit. Jake Evans should have kept his head up. That's not my opinion, but that's what some people are suggesting. But again, people are entitled to their opinions. I'm not saying that I have a definitive opinion. I have what I saw, what I witnessed. You do, as he does, and so do all the folks in the chat. So, like I said, to me, my impression, seeing it in the building live, it looked like a dirty play.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean,
yeah, and I don't think, you know, I was just going to say, Drew, like, I don't think any of us are saying that it's going to be a 5-game suspension or anything like that. I just think when you have that many players on the Canadiens that are upset, look, Jake Evans left the game on a stretcher. Like, you know, like it was horrible to see that, but how often did you see a player leave on a stretcher after scoring an empty net goal, right? Like, just it was a charge, it was a dirty hit. So he might get a fine, he might get a 1-game suspension, but in my opinion, there's no need for it.
Mark Scheifele, if you want to be, you cannot do that. This is the kind of play that we would be screaming about if Tom Wilson delivered it or if Brad Marchand delivered it. And more than that, you cannot hurt your team beyond tonight. So, I mean, look, it's a bad hit, and the NHL Department of Player Safety is going to do whatever they want to do with it, and we'll leave that to them. But Mark Scheifele has to be more in control and cannot deliver that kind of hit at that moment, because it will likely impact the Winnipeg Jets for game two. You're only down 1-0. This isn't, you know, you're down 3-0 in the series and it's over. You lost a game that you probably shouldn't lose because, you know, you've had this length of time off. Montreal's played a ton of hockey, blah, blah, blah. We'll get into all of that aspect of it throughout the course of this post-game show. But just like we criticized Josh Archibald in game three for going in business for himself, for being selfish and for deciding that he wanted to do something, the hell the damage it does to the rest of his team, and it obviously hurt them in game three and then in game four, Mark Scheifele did the exact same thing. He will deserving to get all the criticism that he gets for putting himself and for putting his team now in that position. You don't think Shea Weber is now going to start to, you know, to your point about how mad he was, Dave, you don't think Shea Weber is going to have a target on one of the Jets, players now come game two? Of course he's going to. So Mark Scheifele will probably not even be in that game to be able to answer the bell for it. And now his teammates are going to have to answer for what he did. And the Jets are going to be potentially without Mark Scheifele, potentially without Paul Stastny, and potentially without Dylan DeMello. There's three pretty good, damn good players out of your lineup now. Two of them obviously injury related in DeMello and Stastny, and Scheifele, Department of Player Safety obviously will make that determination in the next 24 hours. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a tweet come over within the next hour saying Department of Player Safety is going to have a hearing or going to have a meeting about it, just like we did with Josh Archibald when we were on for the post game show after game three.
Yeah, I think you make a good point in terms of, Scheifele hurting his team. And the worst part is that Scheifele was having a great game. He was arguably the Jets' best forward tonight. He didn't pick up any goals, but the Scheifele Connor Wheeler line was really effective. And I think he was really strong for most of the game. And you mentioned, if the Jets don't have Scheifele and don't have Stastny, that obviously means Dubois becomes your number one center. And you're probably going to have to move Andrew Kopp up the middle, I would imagine. So it is going to have a ripple effect. I don't think it's going to be, a 4 or 5 game suspension. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a game or two. I know a lot of people in our chat here don't think it should be suspension. And there's no way to speculate, boys, because that's what NHL Department of Player Safety is for. They're the ones that are going to make that determination. But that's what I think is probably the worst thing about this, Dave, is that if he was having a great game. And, he was really good in the first series against the Oilers. It's going to be something that we're talking about a lot, but I think what shouldn't be lost in this game is how well Connor Hellebuyck played. He kept this a 2-goal game in the second period. And, Derek Forbort scored a really nice goal and looked like the Jets have one of those, game three type of comebacks. But this was, a closer game than the score indicates, guys. It's only one game. But yeah, depending on what happens with Scheifele and if Stastny is available, and especially if Dylan DeMello's not available, then you're probably, going to see Jordy Benn go in for game two.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to, boys, is that we talked about rust versus rest, and I think there was a lot of rust from this Jets team. They just didn't look like they were sharp. And I think Scott Billick at the Olympic Sun said this best. It seemed like a game that was not a playoff game. There wasn't that energy level, which is interesting because there were fans in the building for the first time. But I just didn't feel like the game got to that next level in terms of energy. And like I said, I'm sitting here, I'm watching, and playoff game oftentimes can get you onto the edge of your seat. This just didn't seem to have that level of energy. I suspect it will now for game two on Friday night. But regardless of the hit, let's remove the hit and let's just talk about the game itself.
Yeah, let's start with that. Exactly right. Because, obviously the emotion of how the game ended is
no, whatever. And like I said, I don't really care. I mean, let's just focus on what actually happened in the game. And to me, that was a game where it just didn't have that emotional element of a playoff game. It really didn't feel like that for me. It felt like a regular season game oftentimes. And so I just didn't see that kind of necessary kind of kick for the Jets. And look, they were in it. And to Ezzie's point, this was only a couple times this was a 1-goal game. But at the end of the day, you've got to try and push forward. And it just didn't seem to get going for this Jets team.
I agree. And here, I agree with everything you said about that. And I think part of the problem here, or part of the problem during this game was, when the Jets had to play McDavid and Draisaitl, they had to have that attention to detail. They had to have that focus. They had to have that. They had to be so precise against McDavid and Draisaitl to succeed that they couldn't take any laps. They couldn't have that opportunity to ease their way into the game. when if the Jets were playing against the Leafs, and we know the Leafs choked, so that's obviously not an issue. But if the Jets were playing against the Leafs, they would have had to have that attention to detail. They would have had to have that precision against Marner and Matthews. When you play against the Habs, because they don't have that superstar, they don't have that unbelievable top line, they don't have anything like that, it maybe impacts your attention to detail and the focus that we saw from the Winnipeg Jets in round one. And I think that was part of the reason why the Jets just seemed so discombobulated all game long. They never had that. They felt they could just sort of play their old game against the Habs because the Habs don't have those superstar forwards they had to be afraid of. That, to me, it probably accounts for a lot of the reason why the Jets looked like a regular season Winnipeg Jets team and not like the playoff team we saw earlier against the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think you saw stretches of this game, guys, like small stretches where the Jets had sustained pressure. Like we talked about the Shifley-Connor-Wheeler line, for the most part, they were good all night long. And, you know, I didn't think, you know, Nick Ehlers looked as dangerous as he did in games 3 and 4 against the Oilers. But there's no doubt, guys, that like this Canadiens team presents a much different challenge than the Oilers. I think, first off, they're a better team all around than the Oilers. They have more depth. They're not as top heavy as we welcome in the man, Jesse Pollock. But it's only one game here, but there's no doubt that this Canadiens team is going to present some different challenges, and the Jets are going to have to make some adjustments. And you're right. You don't have to just shut down a couple of superstars here. You're going to have to worry about a team offense that looks a lot different.
Jesse Pollock,
and they're good defensively, too.
Jesse Pollock from TSN's Bar Down, former Illegal Curve intern, big Winnipeg Jets fan, former Winnipegger himself, joins us on the post-game show as well. Jesse, good to see you, buddy. I guess your thoughts on the performance by the Winnipeg Jets tonight, your thoughts on the hit by Mark Scheifele at the end of the game, and sort of where the Jets go from here.
Thanks for having me, fellas. Always a pleasure chatting hockey with you guys. Always a pleasure chatting Jets. As the beard is looking pretty nice over there, man.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. Cause I talked to these two guys last time and nice to get you in here, but, I guess I'll just start with the hit. You know, obviously pretty uncharacteristic play by Mark Scheifele. I actually tweeted just saying that, like, I don't know if defending is the right word, but I said, like, I don't really think that Mark was intending to actually injure Jake Evans there. You know, like, obviously it was an emotional hit, and I think he just let his emotions completely get the best of him. First loss of the playoffs. It was a frustrating night for the Jets, and you could see Mark kind of, you know, what happened. I think it was him and Sherratt earlier. He like gave him a bit of a cross check to the head. He was just very emotional to him. And before people just attack him and say, oh, suspend him, it's like, okay, like, we'll see how the league deals with it. But, like, it's not in Mark Scheifele's nature to actually want to go out and hurt someone, right? Like, he just wasn't really thinking, and he might have to pay the price for it. But I just think, like, with social media, people are just so quick to get on people and assume the worst. So,
well, I mean, I don't think anybody assumes. I mean, look, players don't deliberately go out of their way and try and injure guys. It's not like Mark Scheifele is bearing down on Jake Evans in that play and saying, I'm going to put him on a stretcher and then I'm going to win. That's not what he's thinking, obviously, when he goes about that. He lost control of his emotions. And part of being a professional athlete is keeping control of your emotions. And that, to me, is where Mark Scheifele hurts the team way more than anything else. I mean, forget about today's game. And as I said before, Jesse, we brought you in. You know, it's not about today's game. You lose today's game, that's fine. Okay, you're down 1-0. People are going to be upset. People aren't going to like it. But, you know, say la vie, it's one game. But when you perform an action that's likely going to cost you additional games, and I would be surprised, but I've been wrong before many times, that's where he can't get it. That's where he can't do that. That's 100%. Where he can't think about that.
And then that's when you say, like, yeah, it was a selfish play on many levels. But I mean, let's not, you know, obviously, and I know you guys agree with this, let's not forget all the amazing things that Mark Scheifele has done for the Jets. And I think, you know, Mark can let his emotions get the best of him sometimes. We've seen that before since he entered the league. And I think that this is going to be a serious learning experience for him because, you know, I've met Mark a couple times. he's a really nice, good guy. And I don't, you know, it's unfortunate that he did that. And again, you
here's live. here's a quote coming in just now from Montreal Canadiens defenseman Joel Edmondson. Quote, this is courtesy of Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. Quote, it was a dirty hit, but the league's going to take care of it. If he gets back in the series, we're going to make his life miserable. I mean, that is the kind of you don't hear language like that all the time, Dave Minuk, from another player basically saying that this guy is going to be not just targeted, but he's going to have a, you know, he's going to be a focus of another team's attention. Now, could that possibly play to the Winnipeg Jets' advantage if the Habs lose control? Maybe. But that's a long ways off. You know, who knows when Mark Scheifele is going to play again in this series. Maybe it'll be game two. Maybe it'll be game three. Maybe it'll be game four. But some very heated and strong comments from Joel Edmondson of the Montreal Canadiens regarding the Scheifele hit on Jake Evans.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't be surprised. I mean, he's obviously going to be upset. They just finished the game. He saw, you know, the player who has a history of head injuries taken off the ice on the stretcher. The good news is, and I don't know if folks saw it, but Evans gave a thumbs up while on the stretcher. So, I mean, obviously not a great sign, but he was able to at least give a thumbs up and let people know, and his team kind of escorted him off. So I'm not really surprised, Drew. And the reality is, as Jesse is saying, you know, this is one of those situations where it's going to be heated right now. Everybody's emotional. Everybody's amped up. It's a playoff game. It's round two. It's an important game. So people are fired up about it, whether you're a pro Jets against the, you know, pro Habs, or indifferent or towards either of the teams. I think folks are just amped up. I think by when heads cool down and starts to kind of realize, like, okay, you know, to Jesse's point, Mark Scheifele isn't a guy known for that type of hockey. That's not his MO. Sure, he was had a little bit of a bee in his bonnet tonight, but again, like I said, that's not really that guy's MO for what we have seen from 55 throughout the course of his career here in Winnipeg. Again, that doesn't mean he can't make a bad play or a bad decision. But it's just not something that's inherent in his game that we've seen. So again, like I said, when the light of tomorrow passes and people have a chance to kind of, you know, reset from tonight's game, I think it'll change the minds both with the Jets and the Habs.
Yeah, and just to build off of Joel's comments, I think the Jets are well equipped with some big fellas to back Mark if that's the case. So. I don't think he has to be too concerned. We have guys who are, you know, who can help step up for him, take care of business if other people want to go after him and make his life miserable. If they want to do that, they're just going to open up a can of worms because, you know, I think we've got a bunch of big boys who will step up for Mark. So, again, I think this is just something that the Jets
need to like. I agree. Yeah, I was just going to say, Jesse, I agree with you. Like, you know, whether it's Logan Stanley, Adam Lowry, but I still think that kind of, you know, Mark Scheifele's going to have to drop the gloves with someone is so archaic, right? Because I agree with you 100%. Scheifele is not a guy.
Who's known for I don't think it's archaic in this. I don't think it's archaic in this instance. I mean, Mark Scheifele will need to drop the gloves whenever he's.
Why back does a guy who has never has Scheifele ever dropped the gloves, Drew? Like he, I don't even think he has an NHL fight, and if he does, he doesn't have many. So why does he have to fight? First off, if he fights someone like Shea Weber or Joel Edmondson, he's just going to get absolutely dummied. So I don't think that he has to drop the gloves.
I disagree.
It's stupid. It was stupid. It was stupid when Corey Perry had to drop the gloves, and it would be stupid if Scheifele has to drop the gloves.
Totally different situation. Corey Perry's was an accident. Corey Perry's was incidental. You can't tell me that when Corey Perry had to fight afterwards, I said that was stupid because Corey Perry looked like a guy who was sick to death about what happened as a result, no fault of his own. And it's hard to believe I'm giving Corey Perry the benefit of the doubt, but I am in that instance. Mark Scheifele's was
good game tonight.
Yeah, Corey Perry was very good tonight. He's been very good, really, ever since started game four, game five in the previous series. He's been impactful. Mark Scheifele will need to drop the gloves, and I have no problem with him having to drop the gloves whenever he comes back in this series because of you. If you deliver that hit, you have to know that you're going to have to answer the bell afterwards for it. And yeah, just because he's not a guy who traditionally fights, That doesn't matter. You delivered that hit. You have to answer for it. It's not up to Logan Stanley. It's not up for Adam Lowry to defend, to have to fight on your behalf in that instance. I'm sorry. That is, Mark Scheifele has to own that fight whenever it's going to happen.
That's your opinion.
Of course, it's my opinion.
Yeah. And just to, because I actually see where both you are coming from. Like, I agree with Drew and I agree with Ez. But like, to build on your point, Ez, like, how often have we seen Mark Scheifele drop the gloves? How often have we seen Mark Scheifele make plays like this? Like, exactly. You know, it's like never. So, I mean, if he's going to do this, like, yeah, he might have to just answer the bell. It's kind of just part of the hockey code. That's what
was so weird about it, Jesse. Like that, yeah. I'm seeing it, you know, I was watching the game with Naomi for the most part. And then I'm, you know, set up here in the basement watching, you know, the end of that game. And I think everybody watching Jake Evans beat out that icing was thinking, okay, he's going to go for the wraparound, right? Like, it'll be tight because someone's going to be, you know, trying to prevent him from the wraparound. But when you saw Mark Scheifele come in, you know, right out of nowhere and do that, you're thinking like, oh boy, that wasn't good. But you're also thinking like, Scheifele, he's the one? Like, that's something that, you know, I don't know, Lowry or, you know, anybody on the Jets except for Scheifele, you expected that from. And then obviously when, you know, Evans didn't get up, you just knew that it was getting worse and worse. And then we talked about it. You never want to see any player leave on a stretcher. You don't want to see anybody on a stretcher, period. But I'm at a loss for words in terms of why Mark Scheifele decided to do that at the end. Maybe he was frustrated, you know, as we talked about, for things that happened earlier in the game. And I agree with you, Jesse. Like, you know, a lot of people on Twitter, you know, are on one side of the fence saying that, you know, that wasn't a dirty hit and Evans' head was down. And other people think that, you know, Scheifele should be suspended for 5 games. The Department of Player Safety is going to make that determination. And we're going to speculate, you know, up until that happens. But one thing's for sure, you know, we hope that Evans is going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we exactly. Absolutely.
And just to answer the question, Mark Scheifele has one fight according to Hockey Fights. He fought Brett Pesce last year.
Oh, there you go.
So, and he's... And he's not getting 5 games. That is just not happening.
No. There's not a chance. Think one or two or maybe a fine, but I would expect maybe one.
Yeah, look, and obviously, like we said, the Department of Player Safety will figure that out after. And we don't need to play Department of Player Safety.
And then Drew's going to be selling tickets to the Scheifele-Sherrod fight.
we don't need to spin the roulette wheel of the Department of Player Safety. What we have here tonight, and I'm going to say good evening to everybody joining us in the live chat. Nice to see so many of you. Some new faces, some old faces. We welcome everybody as long as you keep it nice and clean in the chat. Keep it respectful. You are listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Dave Manuk is at the arena. Jesse Pollock from TSN Bar Down joins us, and Ezra Ginsberg is also here with us. This is a Winnipeg Jets team tonight, guys, that was not as crisp, was not as detail oriented as they were for in that first series against the Edmonton Oilers. Is that a function of the rust? Probably. Is that a function of who their opponent is? The Montreal Canadiens are not like the Oilers. They're not like, to some extent, the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Habs have four lines that are pretty even, that will come at you line after line after line, and there's not a great disparity between their first line and their fourth line. So it makes for a more interesting matchup for the Winnipeg Jets. They can't have that laser focus on just two or three players like they had against the Oilers. So I believe that the Jets had some trouble with that, with keeping their attention to detail. And Dave talked about it earlier, how it sort of had the feel of a regular season game. It didn't have the feel of the second round of the playoffs. And I agree with Dave when he makes that comment. I do think that the Winnipeg Jets, after tonight's loss, are going to have to really recalibrate themselves for how they're going to approach an opponent that, up until 48 hours ago, they probably did not think there was a hope in hell they were going to be facing the Montreal Canadiens. The Leafs having the 3-1 lead. Dollars to donuts, I bet that the Jets had a lot more film time watching the Toronto Maple Leafs than the Montreal Canadiens, Dave Manuk.
I got to unmute myself here with the Zamboni still rolling along in the Bell MTS place. So I was unmuted. I'm sure the fans, the folks at home, can hear that. But anyways, yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. But the reality is, Drew, this is the game you have to flush. I mean, we kind of expected it to be potentially not the prettiest of games for the Winnipeg Jets based on how long that layoff was for them. And we've seen that, you know, it's not just the Jets. A lot of teams, after a long layoff, this is what tends to happen. You know, you can't stay crisp. It's one thing to have a few days of rest, a few days of practice, but these guys had a lot of it. And I'm not making excuses for them. They're professional athletes that get paid millions of dollars. They have to be ready. But it's easy to say that. It's another thing for them to have to do it. And you can't replicate game action. And Montreal comes in. Talk about a high. I mean, you just beat Toronto. Nobody in Canada gave you a hope in hell of beating Toronto, and you came back three straight to knock them out in game seven. I mean, that they are riding right now, and you got Carey Price playing like Carey Price. So, and he looked, I mean, how good were some of those saves? He made a beautiful save on Mark Scheifele.
Now you're going to get Jesse's spirits up, by the way, by talking about the Habs' seven game win.
No, but I mean, like, it's true, though. It really is. I mean, that's got Montreal pumped up. They're feeling good about themselves, about their game. And again, Carey Price was, you know, he's looked good. I mean, some of the goal he was beat on to make it, you know, a 4-3 game, that beautiful pass by Nikolaj Ehlers on a 6-on-5 finds, you know, Kyle Connor, who makes no mistake. But Carey Price was pretty good tonight, boys. So, I mean, that's the one thing you have to factor in. Carey Price is good, and Montreal is feeling good about their game, given what they were able to do against Toronto. So that's why I felt like it was going to be a game where, and we talked about it, the Jets, that first 10 minutes was going to be critical, and look what happened just 3 minutes and 30 seconds into the game. First of all, you lose Dylan DeMello, first shift of his first shift. He played, I think, 29 seconds. He played from the 29-second mark to minute 03. So whatever that is, that's how long a shift he took. And then he got tied up with Brendan Gallagher along the wall. He's done for the night. So you lose him. Then think about all the injuries you had that happened, right? Matty Perreault blocks a Shea Weber shot, has to be helped off the ice. Then he comes back. Adam Lowry gets friendly fire. I think it was a Pionk shot, a stick that went off of one of the Jets forwards' sticks, hits Lowry in the face. He has to go. Josh Morrissey tried to hit Deneau. He was on the bench. He was sore. He came back. He played right away. Didn't miss a shift. But all these guys kept losing guys. And you have Paul Stastny not dressed. So this Jets team just didn't seem right. And you know, we talked about what they did right in the last series, which was a blueprint. You created a blueprint that allowed you to win and nullify the Oilers. But to the point that you guys have been making, which I agree with, this is a much deeper team than the Oilers. And so you can't just game plan against two guys. You have to game plan against an entire team, because there's production up and down throughout the court, throughout their lineup. And it's interesting because they got a lot of production from the back end, which they haven't done so much this season. But
I think 6 points came from their defensemen today, if I saw that correct. I think their defensemen accounted for 2 points in all of the seven-game series against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Exactly. So, you know, the Habs defense was certainly noticeable in tonight's contest, Dave. I mean, what impressed me the most about the Habs tonight is that every time the Jets punched, the Habs quickly counterpunched. And it's sort of unfortunate that, you know, when the Jets made it 4-3, that we really didn't see the Jets, you know, continue that push. It quickly ended with the Jake Evans goal. So we weren't able to see if the Jets were able to, you know, sustain the pressure that they were putting on late in the game. But, you know, that was what, you know, every time that the Habs sort of had an opportunity to sag, and you would have thought that maybe the you know, heavy schedule that they've played over the last week would have been able to catch up to them, it didn't. They kept counterpunching. That's what impressed me the most about the Montreal Canadiens in tonight's game. Not that they came out as the better of the two teams, because oftentimes, remember, you know, in situations of a back-to-back, not that this was a back-to-back, but you know what I'm saying, you know, usually the team that played the night before often is better for the first 10 or 12 minutes, and then it gets to be more level, and then that team's performance begins to you know, dwindle throughout the course of the game as the exhaustion sets in. You didn't see that from the Montreal Canadiens tonight. You didn't see that lag that I thought you were going to see in the second and the third periods. Every time the Jets punched, the Habs did a great job of counterpunching.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Too much talking on the top of the screen. It's time for the bottom of the screen to take over, including my third cousin, Jesse Pollock here. So, no, I mean, I agree with you 100%, Drew. And let's be honest here. Like, in most of these series, teams are evenly matched, right? That's why the Habs beat the Leafs, because going into that game, you're thinking, what was there, 17 points between the Habs and the Leafs during the regular season? They were the big favorite. And let's be honest, I mean, the Leafs could have won that series, but with the exception of, you know, maybe the Colorado-St. Louis series, there weren't that many series that were lopsided, including the Jets and Oilers. The Oilers could have easily won any one of those three games in overtime. But I want to get you in here, Jesse, because to me, a big key in this series, and it's something we talked about going into the Jets-Oilers series, is going to be the Dubois line, if you want to call it the Dubois or the Stastny line. And if Paul Stastny is not ready for game two, and especially if Stastny and Shifley aren't ready, aren't able to play in game two, it's going to put more onus on Pierre-Luc Dubois to step up, because Connor Shifley and Wheeler were clearly, you know, the best line for the Jets tonight, and you expect that out of your top line. But the production from Dubois wasn't there towards the end of the regular season, and he was pretty good against the Oilers. Like, I'm not going to completely say that, you know, he wasn't great against the Oilers, but to me, that's going to be the key, especially if, you know, someone like, I don't know, you know, Andrew Kopp or Mason Appleton, you know, has to switch lines. So that's going to be a key for me, especially in game two. If you have Shifley and Stastny out, it's going to have to be Dubois who steps his game up and carries some of that offensive load.
Yeah, I was literally just thinking the same thing as I entered the call. Kind of one thing I need to touch on is we got to see POD step up. It's time. Like, we traded him for this specifically, and he needs to rise to the occasion. And you know, I really like him. He's a beauty, and he's a heck of a player. But like, you're right, with guys going down in the lineup, this is his time. This should be his time to shine. And there's definitely another gear in his game that we've seen before. And maybe with these guys going out of the lineup, now that he'll be kind of be looked at as the guy, he'll rise to the occasion. We saw him do it last year with Columbus, against the Leafs. And I think that there's no reason why he can't do it this year. I think another key to this series, goes without saying, is our defense. And I thought our defense looked terrible tonight, if I'm being honest. They just let guys get behind them. They were slow.
To detail. Where they didn't make those errors against the Oilers. You know, we saw it on the first goal. You know, Morrissey and Kopp sort of share the responsibility for that one. They take Kotkaniemi out into the corner, and they do a good job there, but then they both leave him and they guard air. And meanwhile, Kotkaniemi sneaks in behind them and gets the slap pass, and it's an easy goal. It's just mind little things like that, little lapses that were the difference in tonight's game. I mean, you saw it in the Habs second goal. You know, they're a little bit, you know, caught in no man's land. Do they take the pass? Do they take the shot? Well, he doesn't get there quick enough for the pass, hits him too late. I believe it was Logan Stanley at that point. Boom, it's 2-0. Just the half second delay that the Jets were, particularly the defense, to your point, Jesse, is what cost them certainly the first two goals. The third goal is just a skilled player making an unbelievably skilled play.
Yeah,
in Nick Suzuki, you know, but Datsukian is what I saw it on Twitter and everything else, because that was sort of the move he made. Just minor lapses by the Winnipeg Jets were the difference in tonight's contest. Because look, the Jets scored three goals on Carey Price. You know, the Leafs weren't able to get them, you know, three goals on Carey Price last series. You score three goals on Carey Price, and when you have Connor Hellebuck in your net, you think you're going to be successful. You think you're going to do something well. You think that you're going to get maybe a favorable result. We didn't. The Jets didn't tonight as a result of those minor lapses you mentioned there, Jesse.
Definitely. I agree. And I think Helly in that first period was like, not going to blame really any of the goals in it, but he was a little shaky too. I don't know. I felt as though you could just kind of see a little rust. And I'm not looking too much into this loss, to be honest. Like, the Jets hadn't played in more than a week. The Canadians are coming off of an emotional win. The Jets were bound to look a little rusty, even though we should have been a little, you know, we probably should have come up with a little more fire under our asses. But I mean, it's all going to be about our response next game. But then you look at it and it's like, okay, we already lost the first game. We might be losing Shifley for the next two. Is this just going to be one of those frustrating series where it's like, oh, like, are the Jets just like, is this just not our series and the Habs are this weird team of destiny? I don't know. You can get in your own head about stuff, but I'm not looking into it too much. I think Hellebuck is definitely going to, I mean, steal a few games at least. And we're better than Montreal. We are. And it's just, we're going to get our legs back. And once we do, I think we'll be fine. But our defense needs to step up and play like they did against the Oilers, because tonight was unacceptable. Just unacceptable. So many missed assignments. You're right. Just how many odd man rushes too were there in that game? Like, what were there, like 4 or 5 2-on-1s?
That's there was a couple in a row just in the stretch of
there was one shift where like Kyle Connor made two just terrible plays defensively.
Yeah,
they had two back-to-back 2-on-1s.
You cannot do that because I wouldn't say Montreal is a great offensive team by any means, but any team with 2-on-1 opportunities, that's how they're going to capitalize. So, and like, in what world is Shea Weber getting a breakaway? What? Like, come on. Like, tonight was just a weird game.
Yeah, I agree with you. Go ahead, Drew.
I just was going to say lapses. I mean, sounds simplistic, but, you know, that was the big difference for the Winnipeg Jets in the last series. They had that attention to detail. They didn't make those mental mistakes. The Jets had more mental mistakes tonight than the Montreal Canadiens, and that shouldn't happen. I know that rust is no longer an excuse after the first 5 to 7 minutes of the game. Rust isn't something that lasts, you know, an entirety of 60 minutes. The Jets, you swept the team. You've had 9 days off. You should have bigger jump. You should have more legs than the Montreal Canadiens. And then to your point, you just can't let a guy like Shea Weber, get behind you in that instance. That's just the focus, the attention to detail. And I know I'm a broken record and I readily admit that, or as we just started, whatever we started saying,
a flash drive
that doesn't work, to make it a more,
Drew's in the wrong decade.
Yeah. To make it more of a 21st century reference,
even though I have a nice little vinyl collection.
I'm sure you do have a lovely vinyl collection, Ezzy. There's no question about that, but that just can't happen. And that's, what the difference is between success and not having success, particularly when you're so evenly matched against a team like the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, this is a coin flip series. You have the Jets have better, what I'm going to call, game breaking talent. You might say that the Canadiens have a better scoring balance on all four lines, simply because their fourth line, I think, can score more than the Jets' fourth line. But the Jets have better high-end talent. The Habs have the better defense. I mean, Connor Hellebuck versus Carey Price, probably 50-51-49, depending on what your opinion is. But Connor Hellebuck certainly is the equal of Carey Price, if not better.
You have to give Hellebuck the edge. I think the whole storyline last series, and I imagine Jesse agrees, like, first off, how was Hellebuck not a Vezina finalist? Maybe we'll get into that on the Saturday show, but come on. Like, Philip Grubauer's a good goalie.
He wasn't quite as good down the stretch, I guess. I don't know.
Like, goal save above expected, Jesse. Like, come on. Like, the minutes, the games, nobody played more games than Hellebuck. I'm going on a tangent here, but he should have at the very least been a finalist, even if, Fleury or Vasilevsky wins it. But I'm not taking anything away from Philip Grubauer. But your point is well taken, Drew. I mean, it's not like the Jets are head and shoulders above of the Canadians here. And my point was, unless you're Colorado or unless you're Tampa Bay, I mean, there aren't that many teams where you can say that in a series, right? And a couple of years ago, we said that and Columbus beat them. So I always like to bring that up, right? Like, there's a reason why the games are played. And yes, I agree with Jesse. Like, this is a series that the Jets should win based on their talent. And you throw in the injuries, and yeah, losing Stastny up the middle is huge, right? He was great in the first round. He really was. And that forces Dubois to go back to center. And if Scheifele's out, then that further, depletes your center depth. But there's no doubt that, overall this team is better when you give the edge to the high-end forward talent and in goal. And then, yeah, I would absolutely give the edge to Montreal on defense. You saw that. Like, Joel Edmondson's a third-pairing defenseman. And Shea Weber, Ben Chiarot, like, these are good, big, veteran defensemen. But this isn't the Toronto Maple Leafs here with, Morgan Riley and Jake Muzzin, TJ Brody, right? So let's not put Montreal on too much of a pedestal here in terms of one game. I agree with you, Jesse. It's one game. I think the big one, I know it sounds cliche and it's Captain Obvious speaking, but game two is the big one, right? Like, yeah. I agree that with Dave, you got to flush this one. You're not going to be able to use the rust excuse. Not that the Jets are going to use the rust excuse. I see a bunch of people in the chat talking about how stupid the rust thing is. I agree. 5 to 7 minutes, maybe 10 minutes in the first period. But, it's one game. Let's take a deep breath.
Let's take a deep breath. Why don't we take a commercial break? Jesse, thank you very much, brother. Always appreciate you joining us for the post-game show. You know you're welcome anytime.
We have to ask Jesse about Jesse's roommate, Drew, before we let him go.
Okay, before we let Jesse go, how's your roommate doing there,
Jesse's roommate?
Well, his door is closed and he's sleeping right now. It wasn't too loud in the apartment. I think, honestly, like when I'll be honest, when the Shifley hit happened, it just went very quiet in here. Like it was like, oh my God. And then my roommate went to bed. So bit of a more quiet night than usual because we got the loss tonight. But you better believe that if the Jetties are up next time, then I'm going to be giving him the gears.
Boy. That's what you're supposed to do when you have a roommate.
Yes, it's not going to be as quiet on the weekend. 3 games in 4 days. Tell your roommate that he better expect some partying happening.
Man, I got to drink so much water over the next week. My voice is going to be gone. Hopefully, it's gone. It means you're winning.
There he goes. Jesse Pollock from TSN's Bar Down. We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to look forward to game two, talk more about what happened tonight, get Dave Manuk back in here. We'll get some of the post-game comments as well, post-game audio, post-game video, much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve post-game show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. We're back on the Illegal Curve post-game show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg. What is this? Wednesday evening, about 10:15 in the evening. The Winnipeg Jets dropping game one to the Montreal Canadiens. A 5-3 defeat. The Jets go down early by a 3-1 margin after 20 minutes. Every time they try and fight back to make it a one-goal game, the Habs score again. It got as close as 4-3 with a 1:42 to go, but Jake Evans gives the Montreal Canadiens a 5-3 victory with an empty net goal following a significant hit from Mark Scheifele after Evans tucked it in. Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg, gentlemen, good to see you again both on this Wednesday evening. You know, we're going to bring in Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice momentarily. We have his post-game media availabilities. Let me ask you guys this before we bring in Maurice. Where do the Jets go from here? If, you know, Dylan DeMello, let's start with the back end. Dylan DeMello left early. Dave, obviously, you wouldn't have seen this because you're at the arena, but they were speculating, and none of them are doctors as far as I know, but the Sportsnet panel in the intermission, both Kelly Rudy Kevin Bieksa, both said that DeMello's injury resembled to them a high ankle sprain. And they both, you know, obviously, hey, high ankle sprains take a long time to heal. And Paul Maurice said that he doesn't have any update on Dylan DeMello. But if DeMello's out of the Jets lineup for game two, where do the Jets go from there on the back end before we get to the Jets head coach? That would be one of you should be talking now.
Sorry, I didn't realize you were leaving it up. But no, I mean, look, I think as you made the point earlier, it seems likely that you'll throw. I mean, you'd think maybe give Villiers and Ola a shot, or I mean, you don't really want to see Jordy Benn. I guess Dylan DeMello on the right, so there'd probably be Jordy Benn. But sorry, it'd probably be Jordy Benn because that's, you know, he's shown that he's better on the right side, even though he's a left shot. So my guess is that's probably the guy you're going to see is Jordy Benn because, and you know, unfortunately, it means that you may see Tucker Pullman, you know, in that elevated role, which for Tucker Pullman, I don't think is a good spot for him to be in. He's much better suited to being, you know, that third pairing with Logan Stanley. So it's definitely a bit of an unfortunate situation for the Jets in that regard.
If DeMello does this do to the Jets defense? What does this do to their chances moving forward in the series and in the playoffs? I mean, a lot of the credit that Josh Morrissey got for playing so well in that first round had to do with the fact he was back with Dylan DeMello. He wasn't trying to carry a weaker defensive partner in Tucker Pullman like he had been for the vast majority of the year. So, you know, obviously losing DeMello would be huge for the Jets, but is it a deal breaker for this team?
Yeah, well, first of all, Josh Morrissey had a fantastic game. You remember right before Derek Forbort scored, like, Morrissey pinched in, right, Dave, and had a decent scoring chance. And then obviously the Habs couldn't clear it, right? But and I would say, you know, to your point about Pullman's a good defenseman. when people are hearing Drew say that, he's not saying Poolman's a weak defenseman. It's just it's certain players are better suited for playing certain roles and with other players. And Logan Stanley and Tucker Poolman, it's not like, you know, Tucker Poolman's a bad defenseman with Josh Morrissey and then he's a good defenseman with Logan Stanley. Certain pairs just work better and they complement each other. So I just wanted to get that out there. But I agree with Dave. I mean, the logical – and hey, we don't know for sure if Dylan DeMello is going to be out next game. I think there's a good chance he will be. But let's not speculate and say that he's automatically out for the series, right, guys? We just don't know. And I agree with you, Drew. I mean, like, there is no MD after Kevin Bieksa's name. Obviously, you know, he played, you know, in the NHL for a long time, and he's seen a lot of things. It could be a high ankle sprain. I have no idea. But it's like the Mark Scheifele situation. Let's not speculate on what it is. Maybe he only misses a couple games. But there's no doubt, guys, that that would be significant, because it would probably be more significant up against the Oilers, because Morrissey and DeMello had that shutdown role against McDavid and Draisaitl. So it's not like, you know, the to your point earlier, Drew, it's not like the Jets have to shut down one line here. Like, Nick Suzuki is clearly a very dangerous offensive player right now, and him and Cole Caulfield have formed a very dangerous duo. But there's no doubt if the Jets are without DeMello, that's going to be significant. And yeah, Jordy Benn can go in there. He can play third pairing minutes with Logan Stanley. But we know that DeMello has been much better in a shutdown role on the top pair. So it could be significant.
Let's hear from Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice, and we'll be back with more post-game analysis.
It's such a highly unusual play, because when you're back checking back to kill an empty net play, you're coming full speed. When Mark stopped skating, he kept his arms in. It's a heavy, heavy hit. There's no doubt about that. And, I'm sure the league will have its opinion.
Go next to Sarah Lesky from TSN. Go ahead, Sarah.
Paul, could you update us on some of the injuries that you appear to be dealing with? It'd be Paul Stastny or Dylan DeMello.
Yeah, Paul just came up. Paul, there wasn't a mechanism for injuries. There wasn't an event that happened in practice. He just ended up being a game day decision on that one. So we don't think that that's too significant. So we'll list him as day to day. Dylan got hurt on his first shift, and I won't have a better feel for what it is until tomorrow.
We'll go next to Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press. Go ahead, Jeff.
Paul, how with DeMello's absence, how challenging was it to run that back bench?
It was challenging in tonight's game, but in some ways, I'm thinking it can be a positive, because you almost got to run those guys hard to get them back into that game pace. So all those guys got lots of minutes, and they'll be quite a bit sharper, I think, in the next game. But in that particular game, losing a guy on his first shift, that's a real challenge for you.
Go back to Jeff Hamilton for a follow-up. Go ahead, Jeff.
How much of Dylan's absence played into – it seemed like you guys were given far too many odd man rushes.
Yeah. I don't think that was the lack of Dylan in the lineup. We had the puck a lot of times on those, and we're trying to do something tight with it, and there wasn't room to do that in this game. And we gave a lot of pucks back to them that created those plays. So I don't think it was – had anything to do with being down to 5D.
We'll go next to Paul Friesen from the Winnipeg Sun. Go ahead, Paul.
Thanks, Gregor. Paul, back to that hit by Mark. Joel Edmondson says they hope the league deals with it, and if Mark does come back, they're going to make his life miserable, is what he said. How do you respond to that?
The players will sort things out on the ice. I mean, nobody would ever be stupid enough to say anything premeditated going into the next game.
We'll go next to Scott Billick from the Winnipeg Sun. Go ahead, Scott.
Thanks, Gregor. And hey, Paul, would you categorize that game as maybe too much regular season and not enough playoffs from your team?
I thought they were real good. They looked like they were right in their rhythm, and we weren't as good as we had been. We didn't come to the rink to play regular season hockey. We understand, we're excited about the challenge that we have here that we're dealing with. We can be better, we know that, but they were good. They played a hell of a game.
We'll go next to Guillaume Lefrancois from La Presse. Go ahead, Guillaume.
Hi, Paul. I know you mentioned that Mark was back checking hard but he did seem a bit maybe frustrated at times during the game. How do you think he handled the emotions and the frustration throughout the night?
Yeah, I didn't find him to be particularly frustrated. He's a pretty competitive guy. He was real positive on the bench and upbeat, and you know, their line was the one line that I think had some offense going, right? That had some good things going. So no, I mean, he was good. He was good. He had a great look on the power play, and those guys were all right.
Go back to Sarah Lesky from TSN. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, you mentioned a few things, but just in general, what was the biggest difference that you saw with your group tonight compared to maybe the style of game or play that we had seen in those four games against Edmonton?
Yeah, we just weren't particularly sharp. You know, we had a hard time kind of in two areas, probably just that sharpness with the puck, how we moved it, and then some of our decisions kind of to try to do things that we don't need to do. But again, I mean, you can look slow when the other team plays a real fast game, and they closed out a lot of those places that they're really good at. So, before we would care, just give you a long speech of how much better we can play, I think you got to look at Montreal and say they played a hell of a game.
We'll go next to Murat Ateş from The Athletic. Go ahead, Murat. We can't hear you, Murat. Okay, moving on to Sean Reynolds from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, Paul. This may have been somewhat answered with your conversation about the odd man rushes, but I know getting traffic to the net against goalies like the caliber of this series, that's something both teams are trying to do. Did your team make it too easy for them to get to the net tonight?
Early in the game, you know, they got a lot of action from their points. So there's a couple of places that we've got the puck to the net isn't dangerous if it never gets to the net. So, yeah, we can be better there for sure.
And final question to Jeff Hamilton from the Free Press. Go ahead, Jeff.
Thanks, Paul. Two teams that play somewhat similar styles or seem to have wanted to, right? That tight checking, kind of hard checking game. Were you forced to abandon the game plan after going down two goals, or were you hoping to kind of maintain that and hopefully see the game?
Yeah, I don't think so. It's not in our short-term memory over the last series to do that, right? We got behind it after the first and didn't, you know, we gave up one on the power play. But other than that, and yeah, they had some chances. I don't think that had anything to do with what we gave up. I didn't think that we were cheating on plays. I thought that the plays that we tried to make were dangerous and there wasn't a high payoff to them.
Paul Maurice addressing the media earlier tonight after the Winnipeg Jets defeat at the hands of the Montreal Canadiens. Game two between the Jets and the Habs goes Friday night before they play back-to-back on Sunday, Monday. So certainly not a lot of time for the Winnipeg Jets to stew over tonight's defeat. You know, and it's funny, Paul Maurice mentioned in his post-game comments, and it's going to get lost, I think, in how the game ended, but the Connor Wheeler-Shifley line was dominant, I thought, at times against the Habs. I mean, how often have we seen that line this year really cycle and have extended zone time in their opponent's zone? Not very often. Usually they're on the rush and maybe they're one and done. Now that one can oftentimes be very effective. But tonight, multiple different times tonight, they were cycling and they had the Habs hemmed into their own zone. And I think a lot of the good work that that line did tonight is going to be lost in how the game ended and in the end result of Mark Scheifele's hit on Jake Evans, whatever you think of that hit. We don't need to relitigate that again tonight.
I like that relitigate, Drew. You've been watching some Law and Order. Yeah, I mentioned that, you know, when we had Jesse on, right? Like, that's what was so puzzling. Not puzzling, I guess it might be the wrong word, but frustrating, I think, if you're a Jets fan watching that game, because Scheifele was so good. I think he was their best forward. Maybe Kyle Connor and Blake Wheeler were right behind him, but especially with Stastny out of the lineup, guys, you know that there's going to be more of an offensive burden on those guys, right? And I agree with you, Drew. Like, let's wait and see what happens with Scheifele. Maybe it's just a fine, but it could be a suspension. And then you're going to have to make some, you know, adjustments if you're Paul Maurice. I think that I wouldn't be surprised if Andrew Kopp went up the middle, Dave. I'd like to get your opinion on that as well. But that's going to depend, obviously, if Stastny's still out, right? And it's kind of confusing, right? Because we didn't expect Paul Stastny to be out of the lineup. And I kind of texted Dave when that news came out because I was like, what's going on here? And obviously, Paul Maurice isn't going to rule him out for game two. And he's not going to necessarily say he's for sure in because he might not know that. And there's a lot of time between the game one and two. So we'll see. But I agree with Drew. And, you know, when Scheifele, Connor and Wheeler were forced to go together, I mean, we saw some mixed results. But towards the end of the season, the last couple of games of the year and in the Oilers series, like you got exactly what you would expect. You know, some games were better than others. But, you know, there's going to have to be other players that step up. I know that sounds like a cliche every time. But, you know, this Habs team, I don't think is going to be as easy as an out. I still think the Jets can win this series. I'm not going to say the Jets will win this series. I did think that they could win it before game one, and I still do think they can. It's a long series coming up. Obviously, the Habs are hoping that it isn't a long series after tonight's game. But like what other option do you have? Like if you're Scheifele, Connor and Wheeler, I mean, you know that that especially that you're not getting a lot of goals from other lines. Like we talked about Pierre-Luc Dubois and I agree. Like I think Pierre-Luc Dubois, you know, and he's only 22 years old. So we haven't seen the best of him, but I haven't been impressed with him, you know, all year long, quite frankly. And, you know, look at what was his goalless drought? What was it? I forget how many games it was. Maybe you guys know it right now, but I want to say, what was it, 15 games towards the end of the regular season? Like,
I
don't want to put this all on Pierre-Luc Dubois here. I'm just saying, if Scheifele's out in game two and Stastny's out, like, you never want to put it on one player because, you know, Andrew Kopp playing in the top six, you expect offense out of him. And again, I'm not saying that either of these guys had awful games. I'm just saying that they're not putting the puck in the net right now. So we'll see what happens. But I do think Dubois is going to be an X factor.
Well, let me ask you this, Dave. I mean, obviously, Paul Stastny, you know, was out of today's game. And as a result, Andrew Kopp moved up to play in that top six role. Matthew Perreault moved up and Dominic Toninato came into the lineup. To me, Perreault, Lowry and Appleton were underwhelming in tonight's game. In fact, I thought that if Stastny's out for game two, and who knows what's going to happen with Scheifele, I think you have to keep Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton together. I'd rather see a guy like either Matthew Perreault move up from the bottom, you know, the bottom line role, play in a top six, or even put in a guy like Christian Vesalainen, who I thought was good in his very limited time in the first round. Just Kopp, Ehlers, and Dubois didn't do anything for me tonight, and I think it actually impacted the effectiveness of both the third line, the Lowry line, and the fourth line of the Thompson-Lewis Toninato line. I thought just that one move, by moving Kopp, it just affected the bottom three lines for the Jets quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew. I actually thought that I was a little surprised when Paul Maurice made that switch, and you know, people are asking about Stastny. We don't really know. He skated on Monday, didn't skate on Tuesday, and didn't skate at the optional today. So we have no idea. And Paul Maurice, you know, wasn't giving anything away in terms of his lineup. So we'll never know. We don't get anything at the best of times in terms of the regular season. So forget about it in the playoffs. You're not getting any sort of insight into injuries other than, you know, vagueness. So, you know, I was a little surprised. I thought Matthew Perreault would be a guy who could give you a little bit of energy on that second line and not, to your point, Drew, disrupt the third line, because I thought the third line, you know, played really well, you know, as a unit in that series against the Oilers. So I was a little surprised because, you know, oftentimes, like, we see coaches try and make a minimal amount of waves in a lineup. And, mm-hmm. you know, what he did, you know, really, I'm not going to say threw off the balance because I just didn't think the Jets had necessarily it going tonight. But I just didn't think that it was it didn't seem like a good strategic move in terms of you're disrupting what the third line has brought you. Second line was going to be off regardless, and Matty Perreault shown an ability to jump up into a hole and you know perform. So, you know, I didn't think Andrew Kopp had a great game tonight. I didn't think he really didn't do anything super remarkable. And the reality is, you just need that's the whole advantage of this Winnipeg Jets team is the idea of depth, right? And so if your depth you know, I think one of the questions asked of Paul Maurice, I want to say in yesterday's series, what, or yesterday's availability story, was, are the third and fourth lines going to be impactful? And I think he said everybody's got a chance to be a hero. And I think that's true, but I just think, like, you want to do that with the ability of keeping that third line together the way they were playing against the Oilers. Keep that first line because they were, you know, they were playing relatively well. And again, I'm not gonna sugarcoat this and say the Jets played a great game. I don't think the Jets played a great game. Mm-hmm. I don't. I'm not gonna pretend like I think that Winnipeg played a good game. But the reality is, guys, it's one game. It's not the end of the world. You're not gonna go 16-0 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So the truth is, this was the Jets' first loss in the playoffs. Obviously, after sweeping the Oilers, not a great game, but you wash it away and you know, change your focus to number two. Now, you may have to think about this one a little bit more based on what player safety decides, of course. But, you know, to me, it's a flush game, and you just turn your attention to number two and think about, again, the ramp, because you're going to have to deal. They had just scheduled to practice tomorrow at 12 noon. We'll have that info on illegalcurve.com. But I just think, like, it's one of those situations where, you know, you've got a lot of uncertainty now. You don't know what's going to happen with Scheifele. You don't know what's going to happen with Dylan DeMello. You don't know what's going to happen with Paul Stastny. This is almost kind of like, you know, that Calgary series. And remember what happened when the Jets, you know, lost Patrick Laine, lost Mark Scheifele, and lost Mason Appleton in the first game against the Flames. You know, they came back and won game two as a team. They kind of circled the wagons. And I think you may see a little bit of that from the Jets, especially based on some of the comments. I think Montreal's head coach Dominic Ducharme made a comment in his post-game availability, saying, referencing what happened with Tavares, said how both teams were you know, concerned. It was almost like he was alluding to the fact that there wasn't that same level of concern, which I don't really agree with. Like I said, being here in the arena, I was watching the players. The Jets players seemed just as concerned. As there was some yelling. I didn't really know what they were yelling about. There was a lot going on. I was trying to focus on everything. I was trying to focus on what was going on on the ice and on the benches. But there was definitely some yelling between the benches. But, you know, there was definitely a level of concern. So we'll see what the emotional level ratcheted up. Like I said, people in the chat were fired up. And players on the ice were fired up.
You know, and you mentioned the emotion. And Ezzy, I think Joel Edmondson's comments are stupid. And I think they're stupid because I think they get the Jets players fired up. I mean, whenever you see a guy basically, you know, in not so many words, threatening one of your own teammates, you're going to be pissed off as well. I mean, the Habs have every right to be pissed off as a result of the Scheifele hit on Evans. Now the Jets are going to be pissed off because of what Edmondson is saying. And I know he's caught up in the moment, and I know he's emotional about seeing one of his players get stretchered off the ice. But I think in that instance, again, cooler heads needed to prevail. You are professional athletes. You don't need to do anything in this instance to pour additional fuel on the fire. You know, if you're Joel Edmondson, I think you just grit your teeth a little bit and say, you know, we're going to let Department of Player Safety handle it, or, you know, we're just worried about our teammate, or whatever sort of cliche they're going to say. Instead, by basically threatening Scheifele's safety whenever he's back in the lineup, if it's game two or if it's longer than that, time will tell. I mean, I just think that is a silly decision by Joel Edmondson in that instance.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, just going back to what I was saying about Pierre-Luc Dubois, 17 games with no goals. And you know what? I know Dave, you know, maybe doesn't want to say anything, you know, bad about him, but like, for me, this is going to be a key in this series, regardless if Scheifele is suspended or not suspended, and regardless if Stastny plays in the next game or if he misses another few games. Andrew Kopp and Pierre-Luc Dubois combined have no goals. Like, these are top six players now for the Jets, right? Kopp is obviously, as Dave said, ideally you want Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton together. I repeat, 17 games without a goal.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that I think he is going to be a key player in this series. And I don't know if there's some lingering injury or if there's something else going on there. But, you know, earlier in the series, who scored the goals in game one, right? Tucker Pullman, Dominic Toninato, right, Dave? Like, mm-hmm. where are those, you know, third, fourth line, third pairing defenseman goals? Where, like, we haven't seen those since game one, right? So I Mason Appleton scored a goal in game four, but I mean, against the Oilers, but that's going to be a key. And the reason why I bring that up is because when the Jets lost 7 in a row and 9 of 10, what was the Jets' big problem?
Goal scoring?
So that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that that's going to necessarily continue into game two and throughout the series. All I'm saying is I think that that is going to be one of the things I'm watching in that game, because I'm not worried about Blake Wheeler. I'm not worried about Kyle Connor. Those guys are going to get their points, especially on the power play. You got to get contributions up and down the lineup. Just like you said, Drew, Corey Perry, Eric Staal, these are fourth line guys. Like, you shouldn't, you're going to always have to worry about these guys, but these guys shouldn't be, you know, the key players in the series. That's all I'm going to say. The Jets have their own firepower. These players are going to have to step up for the Jets.
Yeah, no argument at all for me, Ezzy. I mean, the Jets just were not good enough. They did not get to the high danger areas. I mean, I'm looking at natural stat trick right now in terms of high danger chances, 5-on-5 for the Winnipeg Jets all game long, 2. That's not going to cut it. That's not going to cut it against that's not going to cut it against Carey Price, despite the fact you got 3 goals against Carey Price. You need to get to the quote-unquote, the cliche, dirty areas a lot more than the Winnipeg Jets tonight. Everything on the periphery. And we know that the Habs are going to make it very difficult, and we know that it's not a fun place to go, but you have to certainly get to those areas to do your damage against the Montreal Canadiens. The Jets didn't do it tonight. There's a lot that the Jets didn't do right tonight. And I guess you can maybe look at the fact that we still scored the Jets still scored 3 goals as the silver lining to the game. Admittedly, it's a loss, so the silver lining really won't be that silver. But you get 3 goals and you don't play that well, you give up 5. But that could be maybe something to try and build upon for game 2.
Absolutely.
The Jets roster, Dave, for game 2, I think is going to be fascinating, because you might have to insert 3 new players into your lineup. Very similar, as you said, you know, astutely just a few minutes ago, very similar to game 2 in the bubble against the Calgary Flames, where you lost Scheifele, you lost Laine, you lost Appleton, and you had to bring 3 players in. This time it's obviously going to be 2 forwards and maybe a defenseman. We don't know about Stasny. We don't know about DeMello. We don't know about Scheifele. So, you know, we'll find out, as we said, between now and puck drop on Friday night. But it is a very interesting situation in the first time all playoffs that the Jets have really faced adversity beyond in-game adversity, Dave.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, to what we've talked about, I think this is an opportunity for this Jets team to kind of get together. I mean, they if you think about it, they had the underdog, you know, moniker stolen from them, because after they were, you know, they and the Habs were eliminating the top 2 dot teams, as seen by most pundits. It was, you know, nobody was really calling the Jets an underdog anymore. And in this season, this series, sorry, was evident. It was very close. I mean, most people have it as a toss-up series for the most part, giving the Jets probably a slight edge. But they've lost that opportunity to say, we're underdogs. It's us against the world. We've been discounted. Let's do what we can to, you know, show everybody they're wrong. You know, like Andrew Kopp said before the series began, you know, it pisses us off, or whatever he said, you know, something to that effect. I think this is an opportunity for this team to try and, you know, get some of that emotional. Everybody's going to be amped up. Let's be realistic. That Friday night game is going to be, to the point you made, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. I think it's going to be, it could be a very bloody game, but I think it could be a very entertaining game, because it's so critical. I mean, this is a game that the Jets have to come out, you know, and again, like I said, you have to flush this. We'll see what they look like tomorrow in practice. And we don't know. I mean, most likely it wouldn't be an optional tomorrow, but you know, maybe based on what the circumstance, to keep a little bit of mystery around his lineup, we'll see. But I would think that it probably won't be an optional. And again, like I said, I go back to that idea of, you have to impose your will. You have to get back to that game plan that made you successful against the Oilers, that attention to detail, preventing the odd man rushes. How many odd man rushes did the Habs end up with? That's something that just the Jets can't afford to keep giving up. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of consternation. A lot of folks are amped up. Like I said, it's interesting, because as long as we've been doing this post game show, we haven't seen this level of whatever you want to call it, emotion from folks. And, you know, then it's from the fans who are paying attention. And it seems like we've got some Montreal folks who are paying attention, as well as the local Manitobans or the people who follow the Jets. But like I said, I think it'll just be one of those situations where everybody has to turn their attention now to game 2. And it'll be very interesting to see which of these teams can put game 1 behind them and focus on game 2 and trying to impose their will. And because you're not going to be able to afford to be slow starting in game 2 on Friday night.
And Dave, I don't think any of us thought that, you know, this was going to be a Jets sweep, right? Like, nope. Maybe some optimistic Jets fans thought it was going to be a sweep, right? But just because that's what happened in the first round, and we know that that could have easily been a 5 or 6 game series, right? So you're right. Game two is going to be much more important than game one. It usually is. And Some of these lineup decisions are going to be interesting, right? Like, do you see Christian Vesalainen come in? Right? Is it Jansen Harkins you see in? Do you see both come in?
Well, does Paul Maurice consider putting... if the Jets are down two forwards, then they might have to bring both in, right? Certainly.
Yeah. So, I do think, I said this earlier in the show, I think Jordy Benn, probably just because of the fact that, you know, he's been used on the right side, and most likely Tucker Pullman would stay up with Morrissey. That would make the most sense. But I'm not discounting, you know, Ville Heinola. It's clearly between Heinola and Benn. And, you know, Dave kind of was hinting towards, you know, Benn as well. But, you know, at the end of the day, guys, like, this is something we didn't mention. Montreal didn't have Thomas Tatar. Montreal does not have Jonathan Drouin. Jonathan Drouin is out for personal reasons. Tatar could come back as well. Another guy that, you know, I think is very underrated, Arturi Lehkonen. He's a guy that is out of the lineup right now. Habs have injuries. This time of year, when you're in the second round, you're going to have injuries. And I absolutely think the Jets can still win the series, even if, you know, they're missing a Dylan DeMello, or if, you know, Scheifele, you know, is suspended and he misses one or two games. So just because, you know, that's not going to necessarily change, you know, the outcome of this series. The Jets are a good team. They're not here, you know, by fluke. They swept the Oilers, who, as Dave mentioned, were the favorite because of how they played the Jets during the regular season. So the series is going to get very interesting Friday night. I agree with you, Dave. It's going to be, you know, very exciting. And it was great to see fans back in the building for the first time in 16 months.
It will certainly be. It certainly now has the feel of a playoff series, and the hate is certainly real. To your point, what you said earlier, Dave, I just want to reiterate this. This tweet coming from Dominic Ducharme, Montreal Canadiens head coach, it's coming from Ren Lavoie, who's quoting Dominic Ducharme, who said in French that when John Tavares was injured, both teams were concerned. He didn't feel the same from the Jets tonight when it came to Jake Evans' injury. So Dominic Ducharme following in the same footsteps of Joel Edmondson.
I don't know why he would say that. I mean, clearly the Jets were concerned.
That's an asinine comment from a head coach.
But again, that to me is one of those opportunities to give the team up to band together. To, you know, and I just don't understand. It's needless. Because again, like I said, I'm sitting here. I'm obviously in the press box. I'm high above it, so I'm not right on ice surface. I couldn't hear exactly everything everybody was saying. But I, you know, like I said,
the Jets were just as worried.
First of all, let's just just to quickly revisit this. If Nikolai Ehlers doesn't do what he did, and just hold back the pile.
I'm watching it right here.
Then that could have been a lot worse for everybody, for Jake Evans. So Nikolai Ehlers showed that he cared about it. And like I said, you know, Blake Wheeler went over, Josh Morrissey went over when they were stretchering him off. So I just don't understand the comment. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Maybe stuff was said on the bench that we're unaware of. But to me, it's a bit of an unusual comment from the coach.
It's a stupid comment. I mean, it's just an absolutely brain-dead, stupid comment from a coach.
It's also false. I mean, it's just anybody. And Dave's right. He had a unique perspective because he's there watching it live, and he can hear what's happening on the ice, especially because there are only 500 fans. And you could see that. I mean, they were on the broadcast. They were showing Jets players that were concerned. These guys are human beings. That's what I was going to say at the end of the day. Like, forget the hockey players. Like, these guys have been through this before. Like, when something like that happens, you're not, you know what I mean, Drew? Like, you're not a hockey player at that point. You're just concerned for somebody's well-being. There's nobody on the Jets that wasn't concerned. I mean, that's nonsense.
Once the scrum ends, and even before the scrum ends, because it's Nikolai Ehlers who protects Jake Evans. None of the Montreal Canadiens players on the ice went to protect Jake Evans. They were too busy fighting the Jets, and I understand why. I'm not criticizing them, but I'm just saying that it is Nikolai Ehlers who keeps his head about him, protects Jake Evans after the terrible hit and the terrible result of the hit. So for Dominic Ducharme to say what he said, it only galvanizes the Winnipeg Jets. It only makes the Winnipeg Jets angry and probably say, you know, pardon my French, but, you know, F you to Dominic Ducharme for accusing human beings of not caring when another human being was injured and on the ice. It's just a look, between Edmondson's comments and Ducharme's comments, they can certainly serve to rally the Winnipeg Jets, especially if they're up against it, being down who knows how many regulars between now, between, you know, for game two on Friday night.
And they, and these guys see this stuff, right? Like I realize that, you know, some players watch SportsCenter or they watch TV or
they know exactly on social media more,
but they know what's going on. So that whole idea that, you know, these guys aren't aware of what's being said, they know.
Yeah, Mitch Marner knew exactly what he was being criticized for, you know, despite saying that he had deleted his social media when he met the media earlier today. So don't for a second think that these guys don't know. That enough people are around them. You know, Paul Maurice is definitely going to make sure his team is aware of what Dominic Ducharme said. He's going to make sure his team is aware of what Joel Edmondson said. Game two, it's now a series. This, you know, if game one had a regular season feel, and it did, game two isn't going to have that feel anymore. The hate is now real, and I think you'll see the intensity level ramped up between now and game two on Friday night. Let's leave it there. We've already gone later than we told our buddies Kenny and Rennie we would. So we encourage everyone, if you want to keep some more post-game comments going, you can head out and check out Kenny and Rennie. Their post-game show is started, if not, or starting momentarily. We want to started. There you go. We want to give a big thank you to all of our sponsors, because they really are the ones that make the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and the Illegal Curve post-game show a reality. That's our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, and of course Lynn's Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, Air Conditioning. I think I got that right. Did I miss anything there, Dave?
HVAC.
Yes, of course, that right. The Winnipeg Jets, because the Jets scored 3 goals in tonight's game, if you call Lynn's tomorrow for an air conditioning or a furnace tune-up, you'll get, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, 30% off. That's only tomorrow, so be sure to get in touch with Lynn's Heating, Cooling, Sewer, and Drain, lynnswinnipeg.ca.
My air conditioning is as low as it goes, boys. It's going to be hot tomorrow. It was hot today. It's going to be even hotter tomorrow.
And it's even going to be hotter on Friday night. Hopefully the ice won't melt prior to game two. One of those typical 40 degree Celsius playoff games that we know and love here in Winnipeg. You know, do they just happen all the time? In any event, we'll be back with the Illegal Curve post-game show on Friday night. Just when the final buzzer goes, we'll be here to talk about it. All of our post-game media, post-game coverage, that's available on our website. Dave, what's that website?
We'll take on illegalcurve.com.
There you go. And of course, we'll have everything that comes down tomorrow from whatever the Jets skate, or they'll have a media availability. So you can.
And hey, Drew, if you're watching right now, if you're still in that chat, hit that like button. Yeah, we're happy that you're here, but on the way out, hit that like button. Let's go.
That's exactly right.
Game two coming up, baby.
You're a good man for reminding us of that. So until Friday night, right when the final buzzer sounds, for Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. We thank you for watching the Illegal Curve post-game show, and we wish you good night and good luck.